Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck On Demand. I'm John Schaefer. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 1-800-NOW-OPEN or open.com.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. In the past 20 years, composer Danny Elfman has turned many small movies into big hits. He's written scores for over 100 films, including nearly all of Tim Burton's work, from Beetlejuice to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. He's also done the scores for Good Will Hunting and the Spider-Man series. He's the composer of TV series themes like Desperate Housewives and The Simpsons. And he's been nominated for a slew of Oscars, Emmys, and other statues. Lately, though, he's turned to orchestral music. In the background, you're hearing the Serenata Schizophrenia, a concert work that's coming out in a new recording next week. Danny Elfman joins us here in our studio today. Danny, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Now, there are plenty of, you know, straight-ahead classical composers who wrote and wrote well for the movies. I mean, virtually every major English composer of the 20th century, and Prokofiev, and
Korngold,
and Shostakovich, and Philip Glass. And yet, film music composers seem to kind of be, in this country at least, sort of grouped into a little musical ghetto of their own. And it's sort of rare to have a composer who is seen as a film music composer given a commission to write a piece that's going to be played by an orchestra in Carnegie Hall. How did that happen?
I don't know how it happened. I just know that no one had ever asked me before, and when they did, I just kind of thought and said, sure.
Now, was it really that easy?
Well, when I first got the proposal, it was, because originally it wasn't going to be for the main hall. It was going to be for the little room, I think 300-400-seater underneath.
Zenkel Hall.
Yes,
right.
Exactly. And that seemed like, oh, great, low pressure, off the radar. It'll be a small orchestra, maybe a chamber orchestra. Maybe I'll just do a small ensemble piece. I always say yes to a challenge. So I was thinking small ensemble, small audience, fun. Great. And then I learned that we'd been bounced upstairs, and then I started getting a little nervous. So the worst thing I did was to fly out here and, like, actually go into the hall and look around and look at the manuscript on the wall. And I found that to be paralysis invoking because, you know, when you have to see manuscript of Prokofiev or Stravinsky, and whatnot, it's like, no, this is wrong. I'm in the pantheon of the gods and I am but a gnat. Why would I be here? So I went home and for about 4 weeks did virtually nothing but shake and shiver and try to figure out, can I get out of this?
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided, as I have, you know, several times in my life, hell with it. I mean, the worst that can happen is I make a fool out of myself. And I've been doing that my whole life. So what am I afraid of?
So you got out of the fetal position and you started composing.
Yeah. Well, I'm used to responding to deadlines. And essentially it's like, I have less than 10 weeks. I have to deliver a work. And since I'm so deadline driven my whole life, I'd still be working on Pee-wee's Big Adventure if I didn't have a deadline.
But you had a deadline, but you didn't have the kind of visual cues,
no,
and the visual imagery that has driven so much of your film music.
No. I had the back burner emergency plan was that I could always put on a silent film and just start writing. But I said, that's cheating. So I put myself through an exercise. 2 weeks, I'm going to write a little piece of music every day. And I did. I wrote 14 pieces of music, ranging from about 45 seconds to a couple of minutes. And at the end of that, I started like letting them develop. And 14 became 12, became 10, became 8. And now 6, 7 of them were really starting to expand. And not only expand, but present themselves in a certain order.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, I have to control this. And I'll lose half of it and then get some thematic unity, as I'm used to doing as a film composer, keep themes going.
Right.
And they just kept growing, and they did not want to move. And finally I said, all right, I get it. This is six different things want to create this hole. It's a man of war.
Yeah, man of war.
And it's the result of two competing, dislikable composers who live inside my head, each vying for airtime. And each movement is a reaction to the one before it.
So this movement is called I Forget.
Yeah.
And so you do have this kind of musical split personality going in the composition process of the piece. Hence the title Serenata Schizophrena. My guest is Danny Elfman. Here's some of the music. Some music from the Serenata Schizophrena, which is kind of a six-part suite for orchestra.
Correct, with a bonus track.
With a bonus track by my guest Danny Elfman. You mentioned you had these sort of two competing composers locked inside your head. You know, Robert Schumann referred to the kind of two sides of his split personality, you know, Florestan and Eusebius or whatever. I think those were the two names. You know, one being sort of this really kind of romantic, emotional character, and the other being a more kind of classical and reserved sort of person.
I didn't know that.
This
is the same thing.
Well, let's hope you don't end up like Schumann did, though.
Let's hope not. But definitely one of them likes to think of himself as more serious and romantic and a little more under control, and the other one just likes to mess up everything. That's the musical messer. And it's present all the time.
Now, that's got to actually serve you pretty well in the world of film music, where it seems like so many composers build upon a shared vocabulary with other film composers. And that voice saying, let's mess this up a little bit, you know, that must give you your music a little bit of an edge that sets it apart, I would think.
Well, I don't really know. I mean, because I'm the worst judge of my own music and probably my harshest critic. I've never been totally happy with anything I've written. But I think maybe the messer-upper keeps things a little more interesting or from taking myself too seriously too much. And I think what allowed me to write this piece was no longer worrying about, this is my great work. This isn't my great work. I listened to Shostakovich's jazz suites before I started, and I said, he had fun with this.
Right.
He was being irreverent. Why don't I just be myself and not worry about this being my great work? It's just a piece of music. And
right.
I think it's kind of interesting and fun, and I accomplished some things I went after and didn't accomplish others that I would have liked to have, but that's the same with everything I do. And once I got going, it got to be great fun.
Well, now, I mentioned at the beginning of the segment, you know, you've done all these film scores and TV themes and stuff like that. But the fact is, you know, most of us who know your name from long ago know it from the rock world with your band Oingo Boingo. That is kind of a strange transition as well.
Yeah, that was a strange transition.
The funny thing is that, you know, we have this 1994 record called Boingo by your band. And as you listen to this excerpt, which is called Insanity and seems to sort of be thematically related to the Serenata Schizophrena, it seems to have a lot of it's almost like a preparatory sketch in the sense. I mean, here you've got the kids' chorus, you've got the horns, the orchestral horns going and stuff. Let's give a listen. This is a 1994 piece by Danny Elfman and the band Oingo Boingo. All right, so even Danny Elfman, even with your rock band, the orchestral forces, the kind of cinematic horns, the children's choir, adding a perhaps disquieting note to this whole thing, it's called Insanity. It really does seem like maybe it wasn't such a big leap to go from this to the current orchestral music or the film scores.
Well, yeah, but you have to take that in context. That was the last album of a 10-year overlapping.
Right.
Because it was a huge leap in 1985 when I began to split half my year into writing, producing, and touring for Oingo Boingo and trying to sneak in two film scores, one or two a year if I could, because I had my first door open with Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and I loved it so much, I didn't want to close the door, but I didn't want to give up the band for that. So for 10 years, I kept them both alive. And in that last album, which before Boingo left, I did bring in orchestra and some of these things, but it wasn't common to Oingo Boingo. That was the first and only time I ever used orchestra. So I think if you look at the body of like 10 albums of work of Oingo Boingo and listen to orchestra, you're not going to hear a lot of overlap, because most of it was pretty kind of crazy, intense, ska-driven.
Yeah.
You know, my motivation to want to be in a band was just, I want to be in a ska band. Now, you know, Boingo kind of became more diverse than being just a ska band, but that's all I wanted to do when I started.
So you like this kind of pre-reggae Jamaican music sound? And
you know, I'd spent a year in West Africa when I was 18, and I came back and I got into an avant-garde musical theatrical troupe for 8 years. And when I heard ska come over from England, this pumped-up reggae with bits of salsa, it reminded me of the music I used to listen to in Africa called High Life.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I want to do that. That has enough energy that I could do it. I was pretty manic, and nothing was really catching my attention. When I heard this really fast beat, that's it. That's what I want to do. And I just let the Mystic Nights ended, and the Oingo Boingo, the band, started up.
So actually, Mystic Nights, this theater thing, came first.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
did you have later. Kind of, you know, musical training, you know, in part writing and voice leading and orchestration and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I had to do everything in this troupe. That was my training. And I would not have taken my first Pee-wee's Big Adventure when Tim Burton came to me had I not had that 8 years of street music experience. And I really mean street, because I built with my brother, we built this ensemble up. Everybody had to play three instruments. We weren't proficient, but we were crazy and versatile, and I started writing material. And the last piece I wrote for them was a thing called the Oingo Boingo Piano Concerto Number 1.5, and it was a 5.5-minute, 12-part orchestration for, inspired loosely by Kurt Weill and L'Estoile du Soldat by Stravinsky and a little bit of Prokofiev and all the things that I loved.
Mm-hmm.
And so remembering later how in 1985, when Tim came to me, I had to go, all right, when I wrote that so-called piano concerto, which I'm saying as a joke, it was called a piano concerto.
Right.
I said, it's been 7 years since I've written a note on paper. I have to remember, how did I do that?
Hmm.
Because I was writing down Duke Ellington arrangements, learning by transcribing music. And I went through like a period where I taught myself by listening and transcribing, but I had no training.
So what did Tim Burton hear that led him to you?
it's my whole life's been a series of bizarre coincidences. Getting into music in the first place was a bizarre coincidence, because I wasn't in a musical family and I'd never played an instrument. But it happened, and I won't go into the whole thing, because this interview's not long enough. But in essence, at the end of the Mystic Nights, that theater group, my brother went and did a film, a cult film called The Forbidden Zone. I wrote the music, and the Mystic Nights played it. Pee-wee Herman, a.k.a. Paul Rubin, heard the Forbidden Zone score and said, well, if I ever do a movie, I want to hire that guy, and he made note of my name. Now, Tim hadn't seen The Forbidden Zone, but he used to come see the band, Oingo Boingo.
Wow.
So they're talking about who do we hire? My name came up. And I swear it's true. When I met them both, I just said, why me?
And did they have an answer for you? Or I guess that was the answer.
Tim just said, I listened to your band. I just think you could do, you know, other stuff.
Yeah. Well, man, you know, some of the stuff that you guys have done. I mean, look, The Nightmare Before Christmas. That's like a Baroque oratorio. It's almost completely sung. The music has this kind of neoclassical sensibility and scoring to it. Did you approach that as a film score? It seems like you and Tim were really working to something a little different there.
Well, we were trying to do something that was off the mark. Tim had the idea for Nightmare. There wasn't a script yet, but he had all the drawings and he had the story in his head. And we decided, let's start with the songs. Otherwise, we're falling behind schedule. So we just worked together for a month, and I wrote all 10 songs with Tim in 30 days. And the only concept I had was that, and Tim agreed with, we didn't want anything to sound like it could possibly come from contemporary Broadway in any way, shape, or form, or musical, that all the references had to be archaic in some way. I wanted the songs to have a timeless feel. Is this from the 40s? Is this from the 20s? Is this from the 60s? When is this from? So I mixed up Kurt Weill and Gilbert and Sullivan and vintage Rodger and Hammerstein, and which were all, you know, big for me, especially, you know, the Gilbert and Sullivan and the Kurt Weill. And out came Nightmare. And so we weren't after like a specific goal other than not wanting any song to sound like you might have heard this on Broadway. So it was kind of an anti-Broadway statement, which, and I knew that that would catch lots of flack. And man, did it ever.
Oh, but man, did you succeed in doing what you set out to do.
I got my worst reviews of my life for that work.
Danny Elfman is my guest. His new CD, Serenata Schizophrena, featuring his first major orchestral piece, is being released by Sony BMG Masterworks on October 3rd. Tell me a little bit about the Batman theme. I mean, I understand there's a story to how this music was written.
There's always a story, you know.
I'm not one of those guys, I got a story for every one of those scores.
The funny story about the Batman theme is Tim flew me out to the Gotham City set. He was only half done shooting. Showed me a little assembly, and they just walked me through the set, and I was just soaking up the vibe. And on this 747 on the way home, this kind of melody starts in my head and this feel, and it's like, I don't know, what is this thing? Is this the Batman? And I don't have the ability to write music without having some kind of keyboard near me. It could be a Casio, it could be a grand piano, it doesn't matter. But I have to have some kind of keyboard if I'm going to put out chords and melodies on paper. So I can't grab a napkin and write all these parts down. But I always carry a tape recorder with me because my best ideas have hit me while driving in the car. I live in L.A.
Right.
I drive, and I'm always
prepared.
So you spend
a lot of time driving in the car.
Oh, yeah. So I get this, and it won't get out of my head. So I start running into the bathroom about every 15 minutes, and I'm like furthering this idea. But I'm trying to do it in layers. Okay, this is the beat. This is the thing. Okay, here we have the French horns coming in. We got first off to bring in the trombones. Trumpets. And I'm kind of doing it like that. I sounded rather like Salieri and, you know, Mozart
in the film Amadeus.
Amadeus, yeah. Dictating. But
well, let's hear how it turned out. This is the Batman theme from my guest, Danny Elfman. All right, so here's the Batman theme as we all eventually heard it, but it began, Danny Elfman, with you making frequent trips to the bathroom on board a 747.
And the stewardesses are starting to freak out because it's like, I'm running in there every 15 minutes. Now every time I come, sir, can we help you? Are you all right? Is there anything we can get? I'm fine. Now every time I leave, there's more than one of them. And they're looking at me like, what's going on in there? Is he shooting up? What's he doing? Whatever it is, we don't like it. And it was very tense, but I was able to nail it enough that when it landed and played the Muzak, which erased my memory. When the plane lands and they play that landing music that they used to do, that's like, you know, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. It's like the memory music eraser.
Right.
I knew I wouldn't survive the landing. So I had enough notes to be able to get it back.
All right. Now, do you still lock yourself in your basement to compose? Is that your M.O.?
I'm still in the basement.
And, what about, I mean, the much rumored group of like musical elves. People say you've got like a whole bunch of people to help with arranging and composing and, yeah, and orchestrating and all that.
I wish. Because if I had them, I would have had a lot more fun over the last 20 years.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've had a fair amount of fun as it, you know, in doing what you've done with Tim Burton and
no, so no, the work is fun, but as any of my friends and family will testify, I'm the least free person on the planet. You know, I'm working most of the time, and when I work, I don't go out. Mm. So if I start a film, I have a going away party because no one's going to see me for 3 months, and it's pretty intense. I work really hard. I'm looking for those elves, the much rumored elves. It's like, I say my little prayers at night. I say, where are you?
Where are my elves? The Serenata Schizophrona, first major orchestral piece. Did you like it? Will there be more?
Oh, there'll be more. And I really enjoyed doing it. And I hope I get to do more. And I hope people get a chance to check out Schizophrona.
The CD is out on October 3rd. Danny Elfman, my guest on Soundcheck. Danny, a real pleasure to finally meet you. Thanks very much for joining us.
The pleasure is mine.
In a moment, a live performance by the folk rock singer-songwriter Nia Jade. You're listening to Soundcheck. Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Each day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. Thanks.